This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
All right, Brandon.
All right.
You want to chat some pro wrestling?
I do.
You do? Excellent. You got some pro wrestling to chat about?
I do. You know, I don't watch as much wrestling as you do. Actually, I don't know anybody on earth that watches as much wrestling as you do. I don't have that many free hours that I can squeeze that into. So I had to research my ass off. And I know I showed you pictures of my notes, but I have covered every major promotion for the past 2 weeks, you know, since your last episode, to make sure that I was prepared to discuss some pro wrestling tonight.
Well, you are probably more prepared than I am.
I really doubt that.
I tend to wing it sometimes and go by my mesmery, or depending on how much we have to chat about. But I do have a bunch to chat about.
Yeah, it's been an interesting few weeks.
I most recently had what I dubbed on my blog, my kick-ass wrestling weekend, where I didn't actually attend any shows. I just watched 5 wrestling events on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which consisted of House of Hardcore 37, 2 New Japan shows, and NXT TakeOver and Royal Rumble. So we got to chat about those a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, a bunch of other stuff. Just a bunch of other stuff and things. So, but I think we need to get right down to it. And
let's go.
I think, I don't know, where do you want to start? Want to start with TakeOver?
Let's start TakeOver. That's the first. We'll do this in order.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I saw your notes, so you just tell me where we're going next.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Just time we're going out. So NXT TakeOver Philadelphia, January the 27th, 2018, Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I gotta say, I absolutely friggin' loved the Paul Heyman narrative opening.
Yeah.
To that special. It was gold.
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me of back in the day when WWE used to get Classy Freddie Blassie to do the narrative openings, like back in the 90s.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah.
I loved those.
Before Blassie passed, those were just phenomenal. So what'd you think of TakeOver?
Well, I didn't watch it live, which is not unusual for me. But, you know, after the massive hype and your multiple tweets about the main event, I had to go back and watch as much of it as I could. So I fast-forwarded through quite a bit of it, I'll be honest. But the first match, I know we'll get to the main event, and I'm sure you got a lot to say about it. Black versus Cole. That was the first match that was, I guess, worthwhile in there for me.
Okay, well, I'm real quick. There was not a single match on this card I didn't like. My least favorite match was the women's match. I'm not an Ember Moon fan. But even that I thought was good, I guess. I don't know. Okay, let's just skip, I guess. Aleister Black versus Adam Cole, Extreme Rules match. What did you like about it?
The biggest thing that always catches my attention, which is especially when it comes to wrestling nowadays, is I love it when the crowd's really into something. Like that just takes it to a whole other level for me.
Yeah, the crowd was really into this show.
Yeah. And they were that really, I think, made the match feel so much bigger and just so much, I don't know, just epic in a way. You know, it was good. I guess there was nothing that just really stands out. I know I wasn't a big fan of all the run-ins, but it's an Extreme Rules match,
yeah.
So it makes sense. So I can't fault them for that.
Right. I really enjoyed the fact that neither one of them came out with like a trash can full of weapons or whatever. I know they eventually pulled stuff outside the ring, but I'm kind of glad about that. Adam Cole's reaction when they were both staying there with kendo sticks and Aleister Black threw his down, and Adam Cole was just like, "Ha ha, you stupid motherfucker!" Like, I thought that was gold. Also, the finish when Adam Cole's got the chair and he's screaming, I'm going to hit you with this chair. And then he walks into Black Mass. I don't know. I just thought it was great. Adam Cole is pretty damn awesome.
He really is.
And my buddy Paul likened him to, in his opinion, Shawn Michaels. And I can totally see that.
Yeah, I can too.
I can totally see that. The electric chair, when Aleister Black had Adam Cole up in the electric chair position, and then he dropped him down on the ladder the way he did, I had never seen that before. Done that way. It was just, if you haven't seen it, go back, check it out, whatever. But he's got him in electric chair position, and he just kind of drops him. I think he face forward, but rolls him down so he back bumps the ladder. It was just, it was cool. It was cool looking, didn't expect it, thought it was cool. I thought the match itself was solid. You're right, though, with all the run-ins, it can take away from it. I know it builds the feud of sanity against Red Dragon, but
right. At least they had a purpose. It wasn't just a run-in, just to hey, look who's here.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised to see Adam Cole drop in as many matches as he has since he's debuted, because I mean, he won the War Games match, but really, otherwise than that, he hasn't. You know, he lost to Aleister Black clean to go for the finals. The Fatal 4-Way to determine the number one contender that Johnny Gargano eventually won. And then, but regardless, after the match, they showed EC3 at ringside, and I thought that was pretty badass, the way he was kind of back too, and he turned around, oh, hey, you guys are there. I don't know. That was just cool to me.
I thought it was neat too. I mean, actually, all of the, you know, in-crowd shots were pretty good. I was really impressed, with everything.
Cassius Ohno against Velveteen Dream. That was, I was not a fan of Velveteen Dream with his feud with Aleister Black and then their match at the last TakeOver. I was like, all right, that was okay. All right, he's better than I thought. And then now with his, you know, his feud leading up in the match here with Cassius Ohno, I'm kind of, he's grown on me. You know, the only problem I had with the match was the two blown spots in a row with the DDT and the DVD by Dream.
Yeah, it was very stood out.
Yeah, because I was concerned over the bumps that Ohno took on both of those. Like, he got dropped kind of dangerously. But anyways, otherwise, in the pre-show, Dream had guaranteed a 30-second or faster knockout. And when the bell rang and the fans started counting, 1, 2, I thought that was fantastic. And then at 28 seconds, when he managed to hit that sucker punch on Ohno and drops him, the crowd popped huge for that. Even though, you know, and I can see why it worked. I actually thought the Undisputed Era against Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly was a really, really good match. Did you watch that?
I skimmed through it. I was trying to get through as much as I could. I didn't sit down and watch the whole thing.
Well, it was, I mean, I don't know. It was pretty damn hard hitting. Red Dragon working on Occam's left leg with very unique punishment and repeated knee bars to weaken the knee. You know, and then that played into effect near the end when he was faltered on the Super Collider, you know, double powerbomb finish. I mean, that was fantastic. The AOP were not bumping around like crazy for these guys unless it made sense, which is unlike in the past when you had like TM61 throwing suplex after suplex on these guys. A couple other things I really liked in the match was O'Reilly using jiu-jitsu to keep Occam on the ground when he had him in a triangle choke as well. Kept picking the ankle and everything. It made sense because it was believable. And also O'Reilly taking that bump from the apron to the floor after, like, he was standing on the floor and the authors are pinballing him back and forth with punches, and O'Reilly jumps up on the apron to try and get away from them and ends up just taking one step and then falling back down on the floor. But he, like, took a Ric Flair flop bump from the apron to the floor. I don't know. I just thought it was funny, and it worked for me. But anyhow, main event time. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, my problem why I skimmed through it is, you know, and I saw your response last episode to this. I just don't like the Authors of Pain. I haven't liked them since they started. I don't like them now.
Yep.
I feel like they're just generic big guys that don't offer me anything. No reason to root for them. Yep. I root against them just because they annoy me. You know, it's just like, please just lose, you know.
And I get that. And I think for me what it is when the guys are on the main roster and they're this way, I don't have the patience for them. I don't care. I don't want to, you know, I nothing them and I want to fast forward. But when they're in NXT, it's almost like, well, yeah, but they're working with them and they're trying to make them improve better. I want to see if they are improving. So I tend to watch every match just because I want to see if they are. And I'm more likely to change my opinion about someone watching them on NXT than I am compared to Raw or SmackDown. With the exception being Elias. And it took a tremendous amount of time for me to not be annoyed with Elias because I hated him in NXT. Yeah. And then when he got called up to main roster,
he was horrible.
Like, yeah, when he got called up to main roster, I was like, what the frig is this all about? And then I read in an interview with Triple H saying, talking about call-ups, who gets called up, who doesn't, and the difference in this and that. And one of the things he said is like, you know, like Triple H really believed in the Elias character, the gimmick, and everything like that. And he just felt like NXT wasn't a good fit for him. It wasn't a good place for him. But that was definitely more so something that would work on the main roster. And at this point now, like 7-8 months later, it's starting to work for me. The way he's playing the crowd, I'm liking. The fact he actually knows how to play the guitar is a big plus. Because it goes along with, I can't remember who said it, but if you bring in a gimmick to the ring, you gotta use it, you know? And it was like, you look at the dynamic dudes, and Johnny Ace is running to the ring with holding his skateboard, where Shane Douglas is at least using the skateboard, you know, like, and then you have, like, you know, Heavy Metal Van Hammer, who the only thing he did with his guitar was throw it in a circle around him and pretend to play it. So,
yeah, that was bad.
I'm starting to enjoy Elias a little bit. But anyhow, that being said, moving on. Main event time. The match that Dave Meltzer rated as a 5-star match.
Shocking to me. Shocking. Not the match wasn't good. Just on paper before this match occurred, I'd have been like, no. Three and a half tops.
My buddies and I have been talking about this lately, actually. I pose the question of, is Dave Meltzer just rating easier these days, or is there really, like, that many high-quality good matches? Because I feel like 10, 15 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, him giving out a 5-star rating was basically unheard of. I mean, it really took something special. And now it just seems like the last couple of years especially, he's been doling them out left and right, including some 6-stars to, like, you know, Omega and Okada's feud. But he's been doling them out, like, left and right, and it's just kind of surprising. And my friends all seem to agree that it's just the caliber of wrestling is just that good right now.
Like, yeah, I concur. I mean, so much. The whole landscape's changed with streaming and the capabilities that everybody has to watch everything from all around the world, and everybody, you know, you have to do something to stand above the rest. And I think guys are going out there and leaving it all in the ring, and that's awesome. I mean, we win as fans.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's almost like I talked about it a while ago, several episodes ago, and I referred to, like, different parts of the country having super indies, if you will, like, you know, Limitless Wrestling, Beyond Wrestling, AML, you know, on and on and on, because I wouldn't count Ring of Honor as a super indie, but, you know, Evolve, I guess, would be Wrestle Circus, you know, AIW, you know, PWG, on and on and on, these companies all around the country. And it's almost like, this must have been like what the territory system was like. It's just, instead of, you know, we're not looking at PWI or Inside Wrestling or The Wrestler or whatever to read about these territories, we're just looking online, or we go on, you know, we watch them stream their product on YouTube, Facebook, you know, Powerbomb TV, Twitch, whatever it is. So it's almost like we're back to the territory days, sorta.
It's it's like the evolution of the territories.
Yeah.
I mean, it's had the only way for them to come back and how they evolved. And, you know, again, I'm totally down for that. I was looking at going to an event next month in South Carolina, and the promotion I found down there, John Schuyler owns, and it's like, I think it's called Old School Classic Wrestling.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, let's check this out. They've got a show with Billy Gunn's going to be there and everything. And of course, all of their shows are on YouTube. And I'm like, oh, so I can actually see what I'm getting myself into. I mean, what am I walking into here? Is this going to be worth my money and my time? And, you know, that you couldn't do that 10 years ago.
Well, like I saw you posted, you know, about how there's all these shows you want to go check out and they're all like 2 hours away. Which, you know, I totally get that mentality because, you know, where I live, if I want to leave the state of Maine to go to another show, I got to drive, it's 100 miles to the border. And then it's however far the show is from there. So, I mean, I totally get that thought process of it's such a long ways, you know.
Yeah, my biggest complaint is stop running them on Sunday nights and Sunday late evenings. It's like people have to go to work. I can't commute there for a 5 o'clock bell time, you know, and then get back home 3 hours back and then get up and go to work the next morning. I have to be up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying there. Limitless used to run. Limitless now runs Friday nights for some reason pretty exclusively. And they ran a lot of Saturdays, and Saturday was actually easier for me, but Fridays aren't so bad. But, yeah, if they were running Sunday nights, there's no way that was happening for me. And that was the thing with Beyond Wrestling. They ran a lot of Sundays down in Providence, which is like 4 hours away, and I've always wanted to go to a Beyond Wrestling show, but I can't drive 4 hours down, go to the show, and then drive 4 hours back type of thing.
Yeah.
Especially exactly. On, you know, like a Sunday night, you know. So I totally get what you're saying. This five-star match, did you think when you were watching it, you were watching a five-star classic? Like, did you get that feeling while you were watching the show or no?
Well, you know, I had yours and several other people's that had messaged me like, hey, you got to watch this match. It's a great match. And I was like, really? I mean, like I wasn't buying it that it was going to be that great. While watching it, I try to keep that in mind. I'm like, okay, let's judge this from what I'm seeing here. And I didn't really feel like it was a five-star match.
Yeah.
But after it was over and I let it sink in a little bit more, I was like, you know, they really did get a lot done.
They started really slow. And I was actually almost bored at one point, thinking like, God, this isn't really that great. And I had, you know, La Sombra, Cien Almost, was such a top star in Mexico. And it's almost like it's almost like Mystico, Sin Cara. When he got to WWE, they just didn't know how to use him. They weren't using him right. He didn't live up to the potential. And after finally 2 or 3 years, whatever it is, he left. And I was getting that feeling from Andre Almost, Cien Almost, the same type of way. But then, you know, his last takeover, like, lately, you know, starting back at the last takeover, right before he won the title, then when he won the title, and, you know, going forward, it's like he's finally showing that potential we heard so much about. And then against Johnny Gargano, who's just Johnny Gargano. I mean, he is Johnny Wrestling. There's no doubt about it. I was a little disappointed with the start of the match, but as it built, they told a great story. I kept waiting for Candice to jump the railing and go after Selena Vega, you know, like first time she didn't, second time she didn't, third time she didn't, and then finally she did. It was just like, but, and then when she did, it was just like, okay, she's, you know, it got a huge pop, and it was finally the right time for it. And then as they told the story with the match and the match built, and then near the end, you had so many false finishes that even I was like, oh, this is going to be the end. Oh, my God, it's not. And then they set something else up. Oh, this is going to be the end. Oh, my God, it's not. Like, I was shocked. I was actually shocked. And I don't know if it's good or bad, but, like, I wanted Gargano to win. And the way they were building the match and the way they were telling the story, it was just like, they were telling you the story that he was going to win the match, you know, and you felt like he was going to get that and he was going to get the win and you're going to have the huge pop and the fans are going to go home happy. And then instead he lost and it was just like, oh my God, I can't believe they did that. And that almost makes it even better in hindsight that he didn't win because everyone, quote-unquote, knew he was going to, based on how the match was going and the story the commentators were telling. And and Mauro Ranallo, I love him. He did a phenomenal job telling the story of that match at Gargano and what was going on and just the way they were selling it. It was just, in my opinion, I knew Gargano was going to win the match. And then when he didn't, it was just, I was shocked. And it takes a lot to shock me nowadays in wrestling, you know, because it has become, in my opinion, so predictable.
Yeah, very formulaic.
Yeah, and to the point where I was not surprised when Ciampa came out and attacked him at the end of the match.
You're right, yeah.
You know, that didn't shock me at all. But, I don't know, I thought it was great. I avoid the taping spoilers if I can, at all costs, the NXT, because I just want to watch and be surprised. It was good stuff. It was good stuff.
Yeah, it was a good match. I mean, I don't know, other than obviously the grudge match is coming up, where Gargano goes from here, other than the main roster.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But, so did you watch, do you subscribe to New Japan World, sir?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Did you watch the New Beginning in Sapporo Night 1 and 2?
I watched highlights of Night 1 and 2. Okay. The only thing I can really commentate much on is, of course, the Kenny Omega, Cody Rhodes.
Okay. Well, all right. So just quickly going over Night 1. And you can read all about my thoughts on all these cards and everything on the Wrestling Insomnia. But quickly going over Night 1, I'm not much of a Michael Elgin fan anymore because of what's going on personally. And I know,
yeah,
you know, that shouldn't affect his in-ring ability, but it does affect my thoughts on him in the ring, personally speaking. But anyhow, his match with Katsuya Kitamura was holy shit good. Like, Kitamura is a young lion who's just a big, jacked-up guy. And he's doing a seven-match series right now where he – and then after that, he's probably going to go on excursion, which in New Japan, they still do it the old way where they have their dojo. They have their wrestlers in their dojo. At some point, when the young boys are ready to go, they send them on excursion to Mexico, to the United States, to wherever – to get experience wrestling overseas in front of different crowds, and then they bring them back and they'll get a decent push. Most recently, the two guys that went on excursion and came back was Kamatachi, who was, well, wrestling over here in Mexico and then whatnot as Kamatachi, but now he's back in New Japan as Himura. Because he came back, Himura Takahashi, he came back and won the Hiromu. He came back and won the junior heavyweight title. He's had some great matches there. And then Jay White, who went on excursion, and now he's come back as Switchblade, and he, well, on this night one, defeated Kenny Omega for the United States Championship. So Kitamura is going to be going on excursion probably after the seven-match series, and of the matches I've seen, this one with Michael Elgin has been my favorite. They beat the piss out of each other. A lot of stiff shots, a lot of high-impact suplexes and body slams. It was really great. Great way to open the show, got me pumped. Great match. And then later on, the never open weight six-man tag team title match with Bad Luck Fale, Tama Tonga, and Tonga Loa against Haner, Taguchi, and Maccabi. That was another great, decent match. Fast-paced action. Tama Tonga is so good. Like,
yeah.
I can't wait for his singles run. I really can't. I mean, you saw it at the G1 tournament this past year. He had some great matches there. So I'm looking forward to it. And then, of course, you know, the main event itself of that night, that was main event of night two. Main event of night one was Tanahashi against Minoru Suzuki for the IWGP Intercontinental Championship. And in my opinion, this match was freaking tremendous. Suzuki was absolutely relentless on his attack of Tanahashi's knee from the second the match opened. And Suzuki loves hitting that gotch pile driver. He'll get you in the sleeper hold, put you down the gotch pile driver, and then it's usually 1-2-3. And he doesn't usually hit that gotch pile driver every night in big matches, because that's supposed to end everything. Well, he hit the pile driver tonight, or that night, against Tanahashi, and then he went right back to the knee bar. And he said in the post-match he wanted to make Tanahashi submit. He wanted to make him quit and give up. And ultimately, in the end, he didn't. The referee stopped the match and awarded Suzuki the title. So that way, Tanahashi can, you know, show true heart and show that he's not a quitter, and, you know, Suzuki gets the belt. And so they, you know, they can, once Tanahashi's healed up, because he was injured to begin with, once he's all healed up and comes back, I'm sure we'll see another barn burner between these two. But that was just a great night to end night one.
Yeah.
And then night two, again, some good matches. Night one overall to me was better than night two. But, main event, well, secondary match, let's put it this way. The IWGP Tag Team Champions, Young Bucks, defending against Roppongi 3K. Fantastic match. This was, I think, better than their Wrestle Kingdom match they had earlier in the year. Matt injured his back early on and then sold the hell out of it all night long. And sincerely, I mean, it was just tremendous, even to the point where they have this spot where the Bucks get a guy down, and then they both do like a backflip and then do a short drop kick or a super kick the guy in the face while he's sitting down. Well, they do the setup for the move, and Matt doesn't do the backflip. He just takes two steps back because his back hurts so bad he can't. You know, they try to go for a couple of their standard moves, and he can't. And ultimately, you know, Yo pinned Matt with a small package for them, for Roppongi 3K to take the titles. And then again, main event match, Jay White, probably the upset of the century, beat Kenny Omega for the U.S. title.
Yeah, I don't think anybody called that.
I did not expect that at all. And then, of course, the aftermath between Cody and Hangman. And what were your thoughts? I mean, Cody and Omega, what were your thoughts on that?
I mean, I wasn't expecting it yet. I mean, obviously they've been building up the last few weeks, so there's been tension and everything. I kind of thought they were going to wait till they got stateside to really maybe do that, but I thought it was definitely well executed. And then, of course, you know, after Cody hits a incredible crossroads on Omega, you're just like, damn, okay. And the confusion I thought was fantastic between the whole club. Everybody's just, you know, like, what's going on? Who are we siding with? And they kind of left it at that. And then, of course, you had the big save.
Well, and see, that's one of the things I liked about it as well, is you had the Young Bucks went to the back after Omega accidentally pushed Matt down. He tries to apologize, and Matt and Nick leave. And then you have Hangman, who's kind of doing what Cody says, but he's not. It's like he has to be talked into it, but he's doing it. And then you have Marty, who's just kind of staying off to the side, be like, come on, guys, come on, guys.
Yeah.
So the battle lines have not been drawn as of yet, but – and like you said, the save.
Which, me being a newer Japanese wrestling fan, I guess you could call it that way. I've watched, you know, Wrestle Kingdoms the last 3 or 4 years, and that's about my New Japan experience until last year. I really started getting more. Yeah. I had no idea what the fuck was going on.
Okay.
Just like, oh, why does this seem so emotional? Like, I was like, I almost feel like this is some great epic reunion, but I have no idea why the fuck this matters right now. So I had to hop online and Google it, and I'm like, oh, okay, this all makes sense now.
Yeah. Omega and Ibushi teamed as the Golden Lovers, which, I don't know, they definitely, when they teamed from like 2009 to 2015 and DDT Pro, and then in New Japan Pro Wrestling and whatnot and a few other places, but those are the two major places. Kind of played that, homosexual couple act a little bit, hence the name Golden Lovers.
That makes sense.
And of course, then you saw the reunion and the hugs and everyone, both of them crying and the audience crying. And I got to admit, it was very emotional. Very emotional. And then, do you want, you know, being the Elite, that's probably the greatest episode they ever put out was after this week, those shows that weekend. Did you watch that?
I did not. I just struggled getting into Being the Elite.
Oh, like, no. It's so good right now. It's literally like episodic television.
Because the behind-the-scenes drama.
They're really building the feuds. Like, we're seeing this feud play out on TV in New Japan Pro Wrestling on their shows, on Ring of Honor, and it's really all being strung together by Being the Elite. So if you're watching all three of these, Being the Elite is really where the story's kind of being told outside the ring. And then, of course, a New Japan Ring of Honor is being told inside the ring. And I think this episode was called Everything's Okay, or The Bullet Club's All Right, or something like that. And there's a scene at the end where Kenny's walking down the hallway, and he's all sad, and he can't believe it. And then it gets to this, he's at a hotel room, and it's room 710, and he knocks on the door, and he waits, and finally the door opens, and it's, you know, it's the Young Bucks. And then it cuts to now the Young Bucks' point of view of Kenny, and he's standing there, and then Kota Ibushi steps in the screen, and I don't know. I got a big case of the feels for some reason, and I marked out. And I was like, yeah! And then the Bucks wave them in the room, and they shut the door and everything, and yeah, it's pretty awesome. Coming up, what, here in April at Ring of Honor, was it Supercard of Honor? It's going to be Kenny Omega against Cody Rhodes, or Cody. Mm-hmm. First time ever, and there's talk that there's could be some Bullet Club dissension in the works with that. Like, you'll have Team Omega against Team Cody, Bullet Club style, so we'll see. I think in the end you have Tama Tonga, Tongaloa, Yujiro Takahashi, Chase Owens, and I can't think of the Tama Tonga's older brother there, Tongaloa, whatever. They're kind of off to the side, like in their own faction. They should probably just start calling themselves, you know, the Island Boys or something.
Yeah.
Just come up with a new name besides Bullet Club, because it's like they're not even involved in any of the major Bullet Club storyline right now.
Right. But, and there's no need for them to be. That's the thing. It's just, you just right. Move them on and let them start something fresh.
Well, New Japan is just full of factions, you know. Bullet Club, Chaos, Suzuki Goon, you know. Los was Angelos de Japón. I mean, there's so many. It's like, every wrestler is in a faction of some kind, practically.
Yeah. And that's like the biggest difference between, you know, American wrestling and that. It's just like, holy crap. Like, I mean, I like stables, but, you know, it's like everybody is in a stable of some sort.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, too, is like a lot of New Japan shows are, mostly multiple man matches. You know, and they're not a lot of singles matches. Like, coming up here this, the 10th. Technically, you know, 3:00 in the morning, Friday to Saturday. But on the 10th here, this Saturday, New Japan's got New Beginning in Osaka. And it's mostly singles matches on that card, and there's a bunch of title matches and whatnot. However, like these Power Struggle shows, there was only a couple singles matches, and those were like specialty matches. Otherwise, there's a lot of multi-man matches. Like, Okada doesn't wrestle. Like, in the WWE, every pay-per-view, you know, AJ Styles is wrestling, defending his title practically. You know, or almost every episode of SmackDown. Whereas Okada mostly wrestles in tag matches, and then until he gets a contender, like, he'll be wrestling Sonata coming up this Saturday. And I think that's where it works, because you get to see, like, Okada and Sonata have contact in a couple matches leading up to their singles match, but you're not seeing them in singles match after singles match after singles match on an overkill level. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And that's actually the way, I don't know, I felt like that was kind of just the standard with booking, and it seems like we've gone so far away from that now, it seems weird, but that's the way I prefer to see my feuds build. know, slow. Hey, you know, a bad bump in a tag match, or hey, there's something going on the outside, but we might get into the ring and get a couple moves on each other before we get broken up, and then eventually build up to the singles match. It makes that singles match so much more important and so much more. I need to see this instead of seeing, okay, I've seen AJ Styles and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn wrestle how many freaking times now in different ways and singles and this and that. It's, you know, that's a whole rant for me there, but, but I no, love the way New Japan does that. I think it's handled so well.
Yeah, I like the booking in New Japan a lot better. But to New Japan's credit, they're not also running a weekly TV show.
Indeed.
You know, well, I mean, I guess technically they are. They're running five televised shows. In February, they have five televised shows. That's like a show a week televised, if you will, if they're running TV style. So, I mean, I guess they are. By comparison, but there's, I don't know, just, it seems, it's like, I like the building of NXT. I think that's why it worked, pay-per-views worked better back in the day, when your made TV shows were, squash matches, and you never saw two, name guys against each other except at a pay-per-view, and so that's how you could drag a feud out for several months, because they didn't touch every week like they do now.
Right.
But, I don't know. Whatever. I'm not here to philosophize on what I think is better booking, although I think New Japan is in, and NXT is booked better than Raw and SmackDown right now. And hey, 205 Live soon will be booked better than Raw and SmackDown.
Yes, indeed. I got that at the end of my notes, so
yeah.
we can discuss that and some theories at the end.
Oh, sure.
Let's get through your weekend of awesomeness. We have a lot of wrestling left to go. I mean, we haven't even touched the Rumble yet.
That's where we're going next. that's where we're slated next, the Royal Rumble itself. Real quick, pre-show, I'm gonna dump this out real fast. The six-man cruiserweight tag, I thought, would have been better had they been under Lucha Libre rules. When you essentially have one team of Kalisto, Lince Dorado, and Gran Metalik, who are all Mexican lucha guys, I think this match would have benefited with the six-man Lucha Libre rules, where when one guy goes out, the other guy can go in, and I don't know. The Revival against Gallows and Anderson. This was a lot better than their 25th anniversary Raw match, that's for sure.
Yeah, but that's not saying much. It's still a 9-minute match.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the Revival are the best tag team in the WWE right now. That's just my opinion.
I totally agree.
Revival gets... go ahead.
They just, if somebody would give them some freaking time, you know, that would be... That's all I ask. give them time to perform.
See, that's the thing. Exactly, dude. I mean, when they were down in NXT, the matches they had against DIY or against American Alpha... You know, they were giving them 20, 30 minutes to have a match, and look at the matches they are putting out. I mean, you know, my favorite wrestling to watch is mid-80s Jim Crockett Promotions, Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, NWA, whatever you want to call it. And you had great tag teams like the Midnight Express, the Fantastics, the Rock and Roll Express, the Andersons, Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson. I mean, and these guys, those teams are putting on kick-ass, unbelievable tag team matches because they are given time to do it and tell a story and build. And quick tags and blind tags and just great double team moves and, you know, guys working together because they're a team, not guys that were thrown together. That's to me who the Revival are. And I can't wait to see Tag Team Gold around their waist. They got the win here, working over Gallo's knee. And then, you know, a nice little chop block roll up for the pin. But, Yeah. I'm looking forward to them getting some tag team gold on them. So, U.S. Open Challenge, how disappointed were you when Mojo Rawley came out?
that just sets the standard usually for whatever. Whenever I get hyped up for most anything in wrestling, it's always, and that's why it feels like it always is.
Yeah.
It's like, we're waiting for our surprise opponent, and then it's just like, oh, Mojo, cool.
Yeah,
exactly who I was hoping for.
Yeah, this was not a pay-per-view caliber surprise opponent. This is a SmackDown caliber.
Dude, it's a freaking main event. You know, come on.
it was just, yeah. The absolute Oh, and then, you know, Mojo botches that Tornado Glorious DDT to make himself look stupid. That was even the best. He gets pinned after kind of basically a, I don't know, a roll-through as opposed to a DDT. But the best part of the pre-show for me, though, was the Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn Twitter Q&A.
Yeah.
shitting all over the fans, their stupid questions, and then completely ignoring, except when they were insulting, Rosenberg. That was tremendous. I mean, they tried to, Renee tried to throw to Rosenberg, and Kevin Owens wouldn't let her. When they actually went there anyways, they just ignored him, like they did not even acknowledge he was talking. I thought it was phenomenal. So, main card, not a whole lot of many matches on here because, you know, you got two Royal Rumble matches, two tag team matches, WWE Championship and a Universal Championship match. So, the show opening with the WWE Championship did not surprise me.
No, and you could watch that match and pretty much skip all the others, in my opinion. Other than the Rumbles.
Well, I'll tell you what. Typically, when you have a two-on-one handicap match and the guys are, you know, and the guys are tagging in and out like that, the singles guy should never win that match because it's two-on-one, for crying out loud. But they made this work and they made it believable and they made you think that, you know, like they did a great job. All three of these guys did a fantastic job.
Yeah, I agree.
I loved it, and the fact that, you know, Owens was selling his nagging injury from SmackDown. And then he's the one that got pinned, and he wasn't the legal guy. You know, he can just keep that angle going as far as saying, like, I shouldn't have been pinned, the referee screwed me again, which is exactly what they did. I thought that was really well done. So you did you watch the SmackDown tag team match of the Usos against Gable and Shelton Benjamin?
I started it, and then I was like, I have so much better things I could be doing right now.
Well, so I gotta say, I was surprised at how much I like this match.
Really?
Yeah, I think you should go back and give it a watch because the first fall was fantastic, really. I was surprised to see a first fall with as many false finishes and as long as this first fall went when you typically think of a 2 out of 3 falls match. And then the way they did the quick finish on the second fall. So essentially, the Usos got kind of like a fluke pin the first fall. They got a quick finish on the second fall. It really made sense. It really, like, you know, the Usos, yeah, they barely held on to the tag titles. But it also builds a story selling more of Gable and Benjamin going with that almost turning heel and becoming the killers. You know, Gable finally, you know, being sick of everything and just kind of snapping and becoming a big-time bad guy. I don't know. I thought it worked. I think it's a great – I thought it was a good story. I thought the way they did it was good, personally. I'm going to skip over the men's Rumble match real quick. The Raw tag team title match I thought was fucking garbage. I'm done there. My exact comment was, this is some weak-ass shit. The Bar won the belt. The triple threat match, Universal Champion Brock Lesnar versus Braun Strowman versus Kane. This kind of, it was what it was. Other than Brock Lesnar punching Braun Strowman with the body shot in his side of the head.
Oh, that was great.
It's pretty much exactly what I thought was going to happen. A lot of big rough spots, and then Kane gets pinned by Lesnar. And what did you think of the women's Royal Rumble match?
I liked it better than the men's.
Okay, I did not. So that's awesome. I'm glad we have opposing. I like the fact that it was on last because this was the highlight of the show. This was the thing that they hyped the most leading up to it, was the first ever women's Royal Rumble match. I thought it was great that they put it on last. Made sense.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the nostalgia feel of the legends of the women's, you know, Beth Phoenix, Michelle McCool, you know, coming in, Trish Stratus, Lita, whatever, coming in and competing in the match. I thought that was great. I would have loved it if they could have gotten, like, one of the girls from the 80s, like Velvet McIntyre, the Jumping Bomb Angels. you know, any of those girls to be in it. But, yeah. Why did you like it more?
I definitely think the nostalgia played a part in it. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of the current WWE TV. So, I mean, I like the big names currently, but it was great seeing the old names pop in. And I was disappointed in the men's match because we didn't get that. I look forward to seeing the legends and the surprise.
I get that.
I guess what it boils down to is back in the 80s and 90s, you know, when the Rumble was, hey, you win the Rumble, you get a shot at the title at WrestleMania. The Rumble felt like anybody could win. It was like, you've got 30 men in here and anybody can win this. And that's what made it so exciting. And now that's not the case. And it hasn't been for a very long time. It's like you have five people that are going to win this. And I guess I still get those almost like childhood nostalgia feelings when I see some legend. I'm like, man, they were so great. Wouldn't it be awesome if they, you know, if Trish Stratus, wins it all and, you know, just blows it apart. Then Asuka hasn't actually lost a match, so you don't ruin her streak, you know. And I got excited about that. I mean, because Hurricane Helms was not going to win the Men's Rumble. I mean, let's just be honest. So
yeah, no,
I think that's what really sold it for me. I mean, we can talk about what happened afterward. Not a fan, but I enjoyed the match. I mean, it was a paint-by-numbers Rumble, which I say the men's was too. And I think that they both came off a lot better than a lot of the most recent Rumbles because there's been so much, I don't know, foul play and bad booking in most of the Rumbles for the last, 10 years? 5 years, at least?
Since Rey Mysterio won back in 2005, in my opinion, but
13 years?
Yeah. No, okay. What I did not like about the women's match, and which is why I hated when Rey Mysterio won, is Sasha Banks spent 54 minutes in the match or some shit, but 37 of them she spent lying on the floor. You know, like
I can understand that.
That was my big problem. There was a lot of time when the girls were kind of laying on the floor waiting for a spot to be set up in the ring. Or it's like, oh, well, Trish is out here, so a half dozen of us are going to hang out on the floor while Trish is getting some spots and eliminating people. Or Molly is, or Lita is, or Michelle McCool is, or whatever, you know? And then, like, even, like, Nia Jax, like, there was no way she should have sat on the floor for 10 minutes like she did before she finally slid back in the ring. Like, that was a bunch of crap to me. And that was the problems. That was the main problem I had with the women's matches, the absorbent amount of time some of these women stayed on the floor before getting back in the ring. But again,
see, I forgive that because it's the first women's Rumble. I mean, I've never even seen a women's battle royal before. So, I mean, I'm sure Shimmer or Shine or somebody's done them before, but I've never watched one. So, I mean, this is kind of a new match for this. I mean, well, I just feel like you got to forgive some of that. I mean, you understand, and a lot of these women, a lot of the legends like Trish and Lita, I mean, they haven't been in the ring forever. I was, you know, reading that Lawler was talking about how Lita was on the no bump list like the day of the Rumble.
Yep.
You know,
she was, and then when she did her moonsault, I thought for sure, you know, she was going to kill herself because she's always done that low backflip on the moonsault, like she basically kind of. She doesn't jump backwards as much. She just sort of kind of falls and manages to rotate. Well, I didn't think she was going to friggin' rotate this time. I did like all the respect that the legends got because if you were to go back and count up the eliminations, the majority of the eliminations came from, like, you know, the pioneer divas, if you want to call them that. You know, of Michelle McCool, Trish, and Lita, and Molly Holly, and on and on. The majority, and from just my vague recollection of it, the majority of the eliminations of the women came from those legends. And I thought that was cool that they, you know, gave them the honor of being of eliminating all the people they did. When it came down to Asuka and Sasha Banks, when it came down to Asuka and the Bellas and Sasha Banks, I was deathly afraid that they were going to give it to one of the Bella twins because I just was, you know, I really, really was. Vince sometimes
make a good storyline
likes to go with the tried and true, you know, go with these girls, the people that have been there a long time because they're dependable and reliable, quote unquote. And, I don't know. So I was definitely afraid that was going to happen. And then, of course, the finish comes, you know, when Asuka barely kicks Nikki in the leg and Nikki just flies off the ring apron. And I thought that was kind of a little bit weak. I think she should have stumbled forward with that first kick and taken a second one that looked good. But that's just me, I guess.
So after the match.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead with it.
All right, so, I mean, obviously after the match, you've got all your champs and how things going to play out, and then we get the debut, which I will give the WWE credit for. They did a pretty darn good job of keeping it under wraps of Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
I mean, she was posting Instagram photos from wherever the heck she was supposed to be filming a movie, like Columbia or somewhere like that. And she really worked hard to make it like, hey, I'm not even in the United States. There's no way I'm going to show up at the Rumble. And
yeah, no, kudos. They definitely did a good job of that.
And I also give them main props for, you know, spending the money to get Bad Reputation, you know, that she used to come out to the ring for the UFC. I thought that was big. Like the Piper nods. And that's about the extent of what I liked.
Well, you know, she was wearing Piper's jacket.
Yeah.
That was his leather jacket. She had said in an interview I read after the fact, or you saw after the fact, that Piper's son Colt actually flew into Pennsylvania and brought it in so she could wear it during her debut.
Oh, wow.
And then, yeah, from Vegas. And then I really like the fact that, what was it? The lettering, the stylized, the font, if you will, of her. Yeah. Of the Ronda Rousey, yeah, was the homage to Hot Rod as well, including the ringer shirt. Her music kicking on, then putting Ronda Rousey on the Titantron, her taking 5 minutes to come out after the fact, the crowd popped huge and then settled down and we had to wait. So that was kind of foolish. Her coming in the ring and pointing at the WrestleMania sign, trying to look all tough, and then smiling, laughing, teeing, and then back to looking all tough, and then more smiley, laughing, teeing, and then back to looking all tough. Yeah, yeah.
It was bad.
That was terrible.
I vented a little bit about it. I mean, because like I was a Ronda Rousey fan. Like I was a fan of her in the UFC, and a lot of people fell off. You know, personally, she kind of gets on my nerves, and I kind of slowly lost a lot of my respect for her. But I was excited about seeing her come to the WWE because I'm like, you know, this is a good match. She was a lifelong fan.
Yep.
She obviously loves the business. I think she's going to work really freaking hard to put on some good matches.
Agreed.
She's a horrible actress, though. And she's horrible at promos as well.
Yep.
And every time we've seen her in the WWE, however short periods it has been, it has come off so amateurish. I mean, it's the type of stuff that non-wrestling fans see and go, this is why I don't watch this stupid fake shit.
Yep.
And that was all I could think when I saw Ronda Rousey. I'm like, how many of my coworkers are going to come up to me tomorrow and go, oh, I saw Ronda Rousey on that stupid show last night on ESPN? You know, because that's how bad it was. I mean, first off, this whole pointing at the WrestleMania thing has to go. It's unnatural.
It's forced now. When it first happened, it was kind of like, oh, that's pretty badass.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the best usage of the WrestleMania banner was when Undertaker made his return, and then Triple H spoiled his return, and no one said anything, and they just stared each other down, and then Triple H looked up at the banner, and then Undertaker turned and looked at it, and at first he shook his head no, and then, you know, then he turns back around and does the throat cut thing or whatever. Like, that was awesome.
Yeah,
you just had a match get built and set and agreed upon without anyone saying a word. So that was just so unique and awesome. But yeah, now it's just everyone points at the damn thing. It's
exactly
absurd.
It's so absurd. And it, you know, it makes a great photo op, and I know that's what they were going for because that was going to be on the front of the sports page the next day. But it looked terrible on video. It really looked terrible. The crowd was fucking done.
They were done. So bad. Yeah.
You know, nobody's popping. Nobody's cheering. Everybody's just like, when is this going to end? How long are you going to hold and point at the damn sign?
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, there's the wrestling fans just like, what the fuck have you done to deserve a match at WrestleMania?
Right.
I mean, you know, look, I know Snooki got one. I was there for that one. But
hey, you know what? Her back handspring and round off, that was much more impressive than I thought it was going to be. Like, I agree. I was kind of surprised by what she managed to pull off, truthfully. So,
but I mean, again, I know you want to try to pop your buy rate or whatever else, but they've eventually said that, hey, she's been practicing for a few months, she's been training. But what makes you think she's going to have a good match, and why do you want to put her on the biggest freaking wrestling stage for her, arguably possibly her first match?
Yeah.
I mean, this is just like, a recipe for disaster. I mean, that's all I can see. I thought it was a terrible idea. I don't think it was the right time, and I think she overshadowed the Women's Rumble.
That was the other thing. Asuka wins the match, but her victory is overshadowed by the fact that Ronda Rousey just debuted. The next night on Raw, Asuka comes out for her celebration, and it's overshadowed by the fact that they announced the first ever Women's Elimination Chamber match. So I was just kind of like, what?
Yeah.
That kind of, like, and that annoyed me, and I'm not, in the ring with them, so.
Right.
Yeah. Anyways, the men's match. To me, this was the best men's Royal Rumble match in years. I thoroughly enjoyed this match. I loved Heath Slater coming out and being attacked by Baron Corbin in the entranceway. And I loved how the next, three or four guys came out and continued to kick or hit Heath Slater or throw him in the barricade or whatever it is that they did. I loved it. I loved when they cut, they had the one camera shot where the guy's running down and they rotate to show, like, look over the guy's shoulder. And you see Heath Slater crawling, like, along on the floor, pulling himself forward. I laughed my ass off. I thought that was just amazingly great. And then when Sheamus finally threw him in the ring and he immediately clotheslined Sheamus back out of the ring, I popped big time for that as well. Let's see. But the Hurricanes return was cool. Adam Cole being in it was fun. Almas being in it was fun. They didn't get eliminated straight away. They had some time in there. I was very shocked by Rey Mysterio coming out, and I actually, as much as I despise him since he won the Royal Rumble, thought he looked great.
Yeah, he did. He looked really good.
I don't mean just physically. I mean, like, I thought he looked good in the match as well. So, but yeah, I enjoyed the men's Rumble match. I think it's the best one they've had in years.
And like I said, I can agree with that. I don't think it was anything special. I just think that everybody's so happy with it because we're so used to it being bad.
Yep. Well, but the thing is, to me, like, my enjoyment's not an afterthought. Like, I was saying as we were watching it, like, this is actually really good this year, and then Nakamura winning, with me, it was icing on the cake because I wanted him to win. And then loved the fact that immediately he's like, I'm challenging AJ Styles at WrestleMania because that's the match everyone in the world wants.
That's the reason why I'll watch WrestleMania probably live this year, because of that.
Yeah. It's already my weekend off from work. I don't even have to take the day off. That's even better. I get to have WrestleMania. I'm off WrestleMania weekend. I get to watch TakeOver. I get to watch Mania. I don't have to worry about going to work. We can have Big Sandwich Day. That's what we do in my household, by the way, at WrestleMania. We have Big Sandwich Day.
Nice.
Yeah, I got a couple videos on YouTube. I'll link you. You can watch us preparing our big sandwiches. It is not healthy, by the way.
Well, it's WrestleMania. It shouldn't be.
Yeah, it's excessive. I mean, I probably put a pound of bacon on my sandwich.
Wow, that's nice.
Well, it's not like a big sandwich day. I have two slices of bread from a loaf of bread big sandwich. It's a big sandwich day like I have a loaf of bread that I cut in half the long way, and that's my sandwich.
Nice.
And that's what everyone does. I'll link a couple of the videos.
I want to see that.
On my YouTube so you can see them.
That would be nice.
Because it's definitely worth checking out.
Well, one more thing on the Rumble that I thought in hindsight, which I think shows a lot of how much the world of wrestling has changed.
Yep.
We had two Japanese winners of the Rumble this year. Neither one of them speak that great of English.
That is absolutely huge, by the way.
Yeah.
That is absolutely freaking huge, that two Japanese. Because, like, all right, Yokozuna, not Japanese. I know he represented Japan, not Japanese. You know, for as far as WWE champions are concerned, we've had a couple Canadians win. We've had Mexican win in Alberto Del Rio. And then the world's title, you know, they had the Indian win and Great Khali. Now, again, to me, Jinder Mahal, he has Indian heritage. He is Canadian, you know? So, yeah. But the fact that, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura, who is Japanese, from Japan, born and raised in Japan, won the match is tremendous. Historically, Japanese guys and gals, except for the Jumping Bomb Angels, have never had a good run in the WWE. The only Japanese guys, two guys, really, that have ever had big runs in the States were the Great Muda and Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yeah, both in WCW.
Both, yeah, basically, had Crockett and WCW. Yeah, I mean, other than what, Mr. Fuji and and Master Saito in the 70s and 80s, I mean, no one really, especially on the singles caliber run, have had the success that Nakamura has had, which I think is tremendous. I cannot wait for their match at WrestleMania. You saw their Wrestle Kingdom match 2 years ago, right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Holy crap. So. I mean, that match was so freaking good. And then at the end when they fist bumped, just basically saying, like, hell yeah. Like, that was epic for me. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I think it'll bring in the hardcore wrestling fans that don't necessarily always watch the WWE. I mean, like I said, even guys like me that don't watch weekly necessarily, that will, you know, I read a lot of results, but I want to see it. It's Styles versus Nakamura. What more can you say?
Right. Yeah. It's going to be awesome, basically. So what else you got? You want to talk some Ring of Honor? Some New Japan? What you got?
Well, you know, let's jump on Ring of Honor because I got some personal stuff there, but we got some other stuff to talk about with them. So I guess the biggest news in Ring of Honor this week was the announcement of the Honor Club, their new $9.99 streaming monthly club, which I thought their the way they tiered it's kind of interesting. So you can pay $9.99 a month, and that gets you the TV archive and an archive of past events. They weren't extremely detailed if that's everything or if that's going to be rotating out. And then you get 50% off all the pay-per-views.
That's huge.
Live tour events are streamed, pre-sales for tickets, and 15% off in the pro shop and a Ring of Honor forum. They're bringing the Ring of Honor forum back.
Nice.
So basically, they took what they already had, their early fan access, I forget what it was actually called, and put that into the Honor Club. But they also have an annual membership. So if you prepay for the whole year, it's $100, and that gets you everything I just talked about. Or if you drop an extra 20, so it's $119.99 for the whole year, you get all of their pay-per-views for free.
Holy shit, that's significant.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean,
they run a half dozen pay-per-views a year, but I mean, you also say they stream other house shows.
Yes. And that's what's that kind of leads into the next thing. As a bonus for all the fans, because they're relaunching the website tomorrow, and I think they want to stress test their network and everything else.
By tomorrow, we mean February 9th.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is probably going to go up February 9th anyways.
So they are live streaming the Honor Reign Supreme live event that I'll happen to be attending in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh, you happen to be going to that.
I happen to be going to that. I'll be sitting in the front row. It's my first ever live Ring of Honor event. I'm excited to tell about it.
Nice.
And I'm even more excited because this is their first live streaming house show, and they are streaming it for free. You don't have to pay anything tomorrow. They're showing it on Fight. They're showing it on Facebook Live and on ROHWrestling.com.
Well,
I have a feeling they're going to be pulling out all the stops to impress people to get them to sign up for the Honor Club.
I think you're right. And I think so. This is what's so funny. You bought this ticket for this show a couple months ago.
Yes. They went on sale like in November, I think.
And initially, it was a TV taping.
It was.
And then about a month ago, they announced that they're moving the TV taping to Center Stage in Atlanta, and this is now just going to be a house show. And you're like, oh, man, that kind of sucks. And – or, well, you – I don't know. You're just like – what you asked me what my opinion was, and I almost thought, like, you know what? To me, a house show is better than the TV taping because the TV taping is going to be a lot of squash matches, and at least in a house show you'll get, you know, some bigger name matches. Well, now, with the announcement of this, and now this is basically going to be their first ever streaming thing from it, you're right. They're going to pull out all the punches. I think you scored big time, sir.
I do, too. Yeah, I got home from work, and I was reading that, and I was about ready to jump for joy. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I just lucked into something special.
The card
sounded great, but I was like, it's, you know, it's a house show. And I mean, my experience with house shows have been only WWE house shows. It's the only house shows I've ever been to. And man, 7 out of 10 times I'll walk away disappointed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it wasn't worth the money. So I'm really excited for tomorrow now. I'm very, very excited.
I would watch it myself live as it's happening tomorrow night or tonight or whenever, you know, February the 9th. But I too will be at a live wrestling event. Definitely not as awesome as yours. Mine's a smaller independent company in Maine. There'll probably be 100 people there, maybe. However, the franchise Shane Douglas is on the card. He's the name they brought in. And yes, he's 53. He's a little out of shape. A lot out of shape. Definitely won't be the franchise of old. But the nostalgia feeling there is going to be tremendous. So he'll come out to Perfect Strangers, most likely. He'll grab the mic. He'll say, cut the fucking music. He'll cut a promo. He'll wrestle his match. And he'll do that post-match promo about supporting wrestling and independent wrestling and how us fans did everything. There'll be a bunch of fucking losers there chanting ECW repeatedly, which I loved ECW. ECW died, RIP, 17 years ago. Let's move on. Okay?
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, hopefully I'll be able to check it out after the fact on Facebook Live, you know, pull up the archive or something like that.
Yeah, I'm hoping they'll post it up there because I want to come home and see it and all that good stuff. And
What's the card?
Okay. So they've got a bunch of people signed to compete. They don't have matches up for. So we got Silas Young on the sign. We got the Briscoes. We got Cheeseburger, Kelly Klein, Deanna Purrazzo, and Mandy Leon. So, you know, we got some women's matches in there, it looks like. And then the actual card and announced matches, we've got Kenny King versus Shane Taylor.
That should be good.
Punishment Martinez versus Flip Gordon.
That should be good.
And we got SoCal Uncensored versus Dalton Castle and the Boys.
Now, SoCal Uncensored is Scorpio Sky, Christopher Daniels, and Frankie Kazarian. That's going to be awesome.
Yes. And that'll be my first time, I think, ever seeing Christopher Daniels live. So that's nice. I get to mark that off a list.
He does the BME because, you know.
Yeah, me too.
I got to say, it really is the best moonsault ever. I mean, the fluency with which he does that is just tremendous.
After that, they have carded the Best Friends versus the Young Bucks.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. Plain and simple.
Oh, yeah. And then we got Jay Lethal versus Jonathan Gresham.
I don't know if you've ever seen the Octopus Jonathan Gresham in person.
I have not.
He is great. He does a lot of mat-based wrestling that ties people up, hence the Octopus name, I guess. He's a practitioner of the Jim Brake Special, which is it's a lot of wrist and arm locks. Zack Sabre Jr. does those a lot as well. This should be pretty damn awesome. I'm pretty jealous. I would love to see that match, not just on TV, not just in person, but on TV even. So that should be great.
And then next we still have the main event to go, which is the Bullet Club, which is Cody, Marty Scurll, and Adam Page versus the Kingdom.
I am not a fan of Vinny Marseglia. He's from Massachusetts, so I've seen him in a lot of independents up here. Not a fan at all. TK O'Ryan, also from New England, awesome. Matt Taven, also from Mass, he's super good as well. So that should be a good main event.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I get to see a lot of great wrestlers. This is great because when they originally changed it from the TV taping, they had a lot of these names on there, and then when they changed it to a house show, most of these names weren't on here. So I was like, what the hell? I went from seeing Cody and the Young Bucks and stuff like that to, you know, I mean, it was, I'm not saying bad names, but it was, I can't even remember who was on it. I know Silas Young wasn't there. It was, it, basically, it was, the card was gutted. It was like Cheeseburger was on there.
Yes.
So I'm glad they pumped it up. Like I said, I'm really happy that it's going to be streamed live. So
yeah, no, it looks like a great show to be going to, and I look forward to hearing all about it.
Oh, yeah. I'll have something written up for the Wrestling Insomniac next week, I'm sure. And I was going to say, with you, with Shane Douglas, you know, I got to see him wrestle live last year in Clayton, North Carolina. He wrestled C.W. Anderson in an Extreme Rules match.
Oh, nice.
You know, you everything you said was right. He's definitely not in great shape, and you know, it was a lot of just trash cans and trash can lids.
Yep.
But it's still the franchise.
Exactly. It's still just, the franchise. Yeah.
He was super nice. I took a picture with him and talked to him for a few minutes, and I don't think the crowd really appreciated who was there. You know, because we don't actually have a lot of wrestling in the Triangle where I live, outside of Raleigh. So it's kind of like you just had people that just showed up because they, you know, they advertise it like a big banner in the middle of town. So it's just like, oh, we have nothing to do. We're going to show up there. You know, you got your handful of diehard fans and you just got, you know, rednecks to show up. But they're actually running a show again in March. And the main event for the NCWA title is going to be the Franchise versus C.W. Anderson versus Sabu.
Oh, you got to go to that.
And yeah, I mean,
the nostalgia of it all.
Exactly. And I didn't have the best experience there, so I'm just like, gosh, it wasn't the best night of wrestling, but I'm like, that's, I've never seen Sabu. I mean, and yeah. I mean, again, God knows he's not the Sabu of old, but to say I saw three ECW originals in the ring.
Yep.
You know, in North Carolina, of all places, because, I mean, you remember ECW never came down here. This is not, that was a northern thing, and that was it, so. That was that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, no, I can see why that would be exciting. I would love – the only time I've ever seen Sabu live was at back when the WWE CW house shows. They did one in Durham, New Hampshire I went to, and he wrestled the Big Show in the main event and Extreme Rules match for the belt. And then when I went to SummerSlam a month later, I basically saw the same exact match again. Just at SummerSlam instead of a house show. So
Ring of Honor wasn't the only people to announce streaming networks this week. All Japan announced their own.
Yeah, theirs is like, what, 900 yen? So like
850. 817 a month, so not bad. And then today, not a video network, but the NWA announced a network,
a podcast
of their own.
Network, right?
A podcast network full of interviews, promos, and I even saw them chime in on Reddit that they're going to do the Ask Me Anythings on Reddit. I guess they'll sit down with whoever's participating and record their answers live.
Nice.
I thought that was kind of different and unique, and I'm interested to see how it goes.
Well, honestly, with with the NWA, what they've been doing so far, I have not disliked any of it. You know, with their how their slow build for everything, their matches, things they're doing on YouTube, you know, it's just everything they're doing, I've enjoyed it. So, yeah, I'm going to keep going with this NWA network, absolutely.
Yeah, I look forward to adding it to my rotation of podcasts. You know, there's so much to listen to. Who the heck can get around to it all?
Yeah, I kind of have that same issue myself, sir.
So, in my notes, I added some questions kind of for you to see your take on, based on some news and some different stuff. So we're going to hop around a little bit here. But I got three things I wanted to mention about the WWE this week.
Okay.
Big news. So Booker T versus Corey Graves. Is this a work or a shoot?
Okay, so I initially heard it was a shoot. I can't even find the podcast he was on that he made those statements on, Corey Graves. I thought it was Edge and Christian's, but then I went to go look, and I don't see it listed anymore, almost like they pulled it. So I don't know about that. And then I heard that it was a work from Booker T to give Corey Graves some heel heat while Booker T was on his way out, type of thing. So I don't know.
Yeah. I was kind of, I mean, I guess if it's on his way out, that makes sense. I was like, cause I couldn't figure out if it's a work, what the end game was. I mean, they're obviously not building up to a match. I mean, at least not on WWE TV. So it's just like, okay. Other big WWE news kind of this week, at least shocking to me, Jeremy Borash signs.
Yeah, the one of the TNA stalwarts. I mean, to the point where they had already done the TV tapings with Borash and Josh Matthews doing the commentary to them, and they dubbed tonight's show, Thursday night the 8th, they dubbed the Borash commentary over with Josh Matthews and Sanjay Dutt.
Yeah,
and
pretty shocking.
They're going to be doing that going forward with the other shows, you know. So I was shocked to see that. I mean, I know Borash started with WCW, but he's been with TNA literally since day one. So to see him leave is very surprising.
Especially with all the ups and downs. Like, he really seemed like, hey, if he's gone through all this shit over the years, you know, what made that decision now? Like, hey, now's the time to go. When, in my opinion, it looks like Impact's on, you know, on his way up. I really think they've got a system in place that, hey, in the next 6 months, I think we might be impressed with what we're seeing.
Yeah, no, I can agree with you 100%. I'm looking forward to the new shows. I'm not a huge Austin Aries fan.
Me neither.
So, you know, him coming in and winning the title like he did and everything, it doesn't do a whole lot for me. But I am, because of Don Callis and Scott D'Amore, I'm actually giving Impact more of a break to watch it than I have in years, basically. Since Hogan and Bischoff came in and ruined it.
Pretty much. Yeah, I'm giving them 90 days. That's my thing. I want to see where the tapings are in 90 days. I'm not going to watch now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got things to work through. I'm going to tune in probably in April, May, and we'll see where it's at.
The April pay-per-view is going to be the big test, I think. Because they're like, all the tapings they have are leading up to the pay-per-view in April. I mean, that's when the tapings are done. They have, you know, either their go-home show up is taped and in the can for the pay-per-view. Then they have their pay-per-view that they're doing. And I think the match quality there and the story quality there is really going to tell us what TNA's doing. Because Bound for Glory, the last pay-per-view under the old regime there back in November, that was terrible. God, that was terrible. I mean, terrible.
It really is. And I'm, you know, I think a lot of people think they're hurting by losing EC3 and Lashley and all these. I'm actually happy about it. Because quite frankly, I associate them with the bad TNA days. Like, yeah. I want fresh talent. And I know you were giving me a little shit earlier on Twitter because I follow the Global Wrestling Network's Twitter page.
Yep.
And I haven't signed up for it yet, but they've been live tweeting old episodes of Impact and the earlier shows. And, you know, it's got me nostalgic because I didn't watch the weekly pay-per-views, but I started when TNA started on Fox Sports.
That's when I started watching myself.
And I really enjoyed it. Like, I really enjoyed these new faces. I mean, it was great. Hey, Raven's here and DDP pops up,
yep.
But it was great. Like, hey, who the hell's this Monty Brown guy? What the hell's a pounce? You know?
okay. I love Monty Brown.
I couldn't tell by your comment if you did or didn't.
I'm a huge fan of Monty Brown. I thought the pounce was such a great finisher because it's literally something he could do to almost anybody. And he had so much charisma. I like the way he wiped his eyebrows off on the rope, top rope.
Yeah.
I don't know. Forget about that. Yeah, and then when he came to WWE as Marcus Corvan, I thought, that's a really dumb name. But he's basically Monty Brown with a new name. Like, his ring style was the same. The pounce was the same. Everything was the same. I thought it was fantastic. I loved him. I thought he was great. I hated when he left the WWE. But then when he did, I kept waiting for him to turn up in TNA. And I was so disappointed when he never did. You know?
Yeah.
He almost had, to me, like, that Kurt Angle type ability where he came from another sport into wrestling and in a very short time was so good in the ring. I don't know. Maybe I got rose-colored glasses on, but I just...
I don't think you do. Like I said, 'cause that was the way I was feeling. I'm watching their clips, and I'm just like, God, like I remember turning on Impact. I have no idea who the hell this guy is. You know, it wasn't like indie wrestling was huge in 2004 right. or whatever. So it's just like, who the hell is this guy? Where did he come from? And oh my God, is he jacked? And then it was just impressive. And TNA had that. They offered you something different and new and unique. And, you know, I would say from 2004 to the night Hogan took over, I was a massive fan. Yeah. I mean, I hate that people kind of shit on the whole time, because I don't think we'd have the Divas or the women's wrestling revolution that we've had without TNA.
No,
because in 2009 and 10, they showed you what a damn good women's wrestling can be.
TNA, I made the comments then, and as well myself, that TNA really showed us what women's wrestling could be. You know.
Yeah. And
in
I've
the
even
United
heard
States.
Like Becky Lynch was talking, I think I was listening to her on Stone Cold's podcast a year or so ago, and you know, she moved to Orlando because she was hoping to get on a TNA back when the women's wrestling was on fire. And that was her goal, was to get into TNA.
Well, Sasha Banks even said that, like, you know, she did not like the women's wrestling that was going on in the WWE, because to her, she's like, I'm not a diva. I'm not going to do bra and panties matches and mud bowl matches and on and on and on and all that garbage. You know, like, she wanted to be a wrestler. She did not want to be what WWE was portraying what women's wrestling is or was. And then, like we were saying, you know, TNA, they were showing us you can have great high quality women's matches at a time when WWE just wasn't there.
Yeah.
To me, my love with TNA, Hulk Hogan ruined it when he showed up, and Hulk Hogan ruined WCW when he showed up. So, like, when I go back to watch, like, classic, like, WCW, whatever, I really go for the pre-Hogan years, the pre-Hogan red and yellow years, if I can, because once Hogan gets there, after that Bash at the Beach pay-per-view, man, he starts bringing in Earthquake and Boss Man and, you know, and Brutus and, you know, everybody else that just, and to me, it started going downhill for a good couple of years there. Until the launch of Nitro. And then once Nitro came, yeah, they were still predominant, but it got better, started getting better with the launch of Nitro for me.
I agree. I have no use for WCW, which is about 94 through 96.
Yeah. Yep. Pretty much. What else you got there in your notes, sir?
Well, let's see. To pay to bounce back over to WWE, but I had two more things in there. So the mixed match viewership is apparently down huge. it dropped 32% from the first week.
Yep.
And what's interesting is with the WWE's TV rights coming up, there's been a lot of talk about what they're going to do with Raw and SmackDown. And a lot of people are thinking, hey, they're going to take this digital and they're not going to put it on the WWE network. They're going to take it to Amazon Prime or Facebook or Apple, you know, one of these big companies that are jumping into original content. But after this, can they do that? I mean, because it doesn't look good. And is it a victim of a boring wrestling show that nobody wants to watch? Or is it, you know, I mean, is there just no audience online for it?
I think, mainstream-wise, WWE has more TV viewers weekly for their shows than they have subscribers to the network. And that should tell you right there why being on unconventional television for the weekly shows won't work. Because if people really loved, like, you know what I mean? Like, if people were only watching WWE who subscribed to the network, then their ratings would be terrible.
Right.
So that's why I think the reason why the network does work so much, I think it is a huge revenue stream for them, is because worldwide, pay-per-views were already free in a lot of places outside of America. And they do make more money on the network by selling it for $10 a month and giving you every pay-per-view for free than they did just selling the pay-per-view monthly, because you have people like me who love wrestling, who are tremendous diehard fans, but they basically got Royal Rumble. I only got Royal Rumble and WrestleMania every year because I just couldn't afford it otherwise.
Yeah, oh yeah, pay-per-views are expensive.
You know, and I think you have like fans like me that went from just getting Royal Rumble and WrestleMania to now subscribing every month since they launched, what was it, 3 years ago now, even? Because, hey, you know what? $10 a month for a pay-per-view is a lot cheaper than $45 for a pay-per-view. And instead of getting one or two pay-per-views a year and spending, you know, $80, now they're spending $120 a year. So, yeah, I don't know. That's just me.
Let's see. I guess my question, especially with this, I believe there's a market for a one-hour wrestling show. Like, for a guy like me who doesn't have, you know, whatever, 15 hours to commit to WWE TV a week or whatever the hell it is. I mean, we've got 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, 1 hour NXT. I mean,
1 hour 205 Live.
1 hour 205 Live. I mean, that's a lot of wrestling. That's a lot of time. And I hate to agree with Vince Russo, but he brought it up on a podcast I was listening to last year, where it's like, look, when you've got things like Game of Thrones and high quality television, we're in the golden age of television.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people make the choice, hey, I'm going to watch Game of Thrones. I'm not going to watch, you know, Raw this week because it's 3 hours long and it's boring.
Yeah.
And I do that. Like I said, I've loved wrestling forever and I love wrestling, but I don't love sports entertainment. And I feel like the WWE, with the amount of talent they've got, they can put on a one-hour show, a one-hour wrestling show, what Main Event was supposed to be,
yep,
and draw people in. And, like, when I heard, hey, they're doing a one-hour mixed match, I'm like, this sounds great. Like, I'm like, this is exactly up my alley. You know, keep it separate from all the other storylines. Have just this one show. I mean, basically like NXT, where it's like you're a weekly in one, you know, continuity. You don't have to dedicate a lot of time to it. But then they take it and they make it feel exactly the same. It looks exactly the same.
The coolest thing we got out of Mixed Match Challenge, though, was the fact that you have Bobby Roode and Charlotte teamed up together and they call themselves the Robe Warriors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if that's the best thing you get out of it, that's what I'm saying is bad, and that's why nobody's watching it.
The second best thing we got out of it was the getting to see the personality of Braun Strowman. It has been funny to me. And the team of him and Alexa Bliss, I think, is hilarious.
That's what I was saying. His pictures with Alexa Bliss are just fantastic.
Did you see their match?
No, I did not.
Okay, it's worth watching. Or actually, I think WWE did a clip on their YouTube page where I think they called it like mic'd up. And it's, you can hear all the trash talking going on between Becky Lynch and Sami Zayn against Alexa Bliss and Braun Strowman, and it's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. It's so worth checking out. I'll try to link you to it after we're done here. It's definitely worth checking out. But, yeah, the mixed match challenge to me, I don't know. A mixed tag match when it's not intergender, where the guy's in, it's guy versus guy, girl versus girl, it doesn't work to me, because you can have you don't have that hot tag feeling. Because the second the girl tags out, oh, the guy's in the ring. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You lose the big element of, to me, for tag team wrestling is you got the guy getting the heat for the whole time. You got Ricky Morton selling like crazy. And if Ricky Morton finally makes it a hot tag to Robert Gibson, then it doesn't matter. Because the other opponent automatically comes in the ring. Or worse yet, you got the babyface sell. Why would the girl tag out then? What would inspire, you know, the girl or Alexa right. Bliss to tag Braun Strowman if Becky Lynch is selling like crazy? Why would she tag out? It wouldn't make any sense. And yet they do, because they do. And now as soon as she tags, oh, well, Becky Lynch gets to go out of the ring, and all that beatdown was for naught because now the fresh guy's automatically in the ring. So that's my problem with the mixed match challenge, if you will, as far as how that match style works. And if Asuka doesn't win, then it kills. Like, that's the other thing right now. It's like, I love the fact that Asuka's undefeated, but I hate her being put in scenarios where she could lose and become defeated, but not actually lose. This is one way. The Royal Rumble's another way. I think when Asuka does finally lose that first time, that's got to be huge at this point. They can't just have it happen. You know, they can't have fucking Brutus Beefcake beat Mr. Perfect, you know, this time around. Okay?
Or somebody hit her with a cattle prod.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's got to mean something. But at the same time, if Ronda Rousey's the one that beats her for the first time, then essentially you've just spent 3 years building someone who was nothing but fodder for Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, and that's a total misuse.
Yeah, I mean, if Charlotte beats her for the first time, almost makes sense. Because they never wrestled in NXT against each other. They never had a match together against each other at all. And, you know, as we can know, Charlotte's a damn fine competitor.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. I don't know. We'll see. 205 Live real quick. So
yeah, that was where I wanted to go next.
So Triple H had – so this is the true story. I watched 205 Live for the first 7 months a couple weeks ago because it just wasn't worth even having on the background because it just wasn't good. But I wanted to see, after Enzo got fired, I wanted to see what they were going to do with the belt. And then they were like, oh, next week we're going to have a new general manager and they're going to make the decision. And I was like, oh, whatever. And that night the matches weren't very good. And then the next week we get Rockstar Spud. And the matches that night, they were pretty good. And then last night, or this past Tuesday night, holy shit, we got two great matches on that show. And then they announce, oh, Triple H is taking over 205 Live. And I'm like, well, that makes sense right there. Because it definitely did not look like it did prior to that. Like, the Cruiserweight Classic was so good, and then they started 205 Live, and it's like, what the damn hell is this? And then the stupid storylines with Alicia Fox, and on and on and on. And it's just like, but it looks like now with Triple H taking over, they're gearing it to go back towards what the Cruiserweight Classic was to give us that style of wrestling, which I'm all for that.
I am too. I mean, the Cruiserweight Classic is some of the most I've enjoyed myself watching wrestling in the last 5 years. I mean, I was so excited. I love Cruiserweights. I love the flippy shit. I mean, it's just something I'm into. And then when they say, hey, we're going to turn this into an hour-long TV show, again, like I said, I'm looking for a damn good hour-long TV show.
Yep.
And I'm like, this is perfect. This is exactly what I want. I can read the results of Raw like I always do, and I can watch one great hour of wrestling a week. And then, like you said, what the hell was that shit?
Yep.
It was like every week it just got worse.
Yeah.
And I mean, and you know, as like you said, Triple H has taken it over, and the, you know, at least the rumors and the reports are that Vince McMahon wanted to run it because he wanted them to bring out their personalities. And that brings up the question, is Vince McMahon completely out of touch with what today's audience wants? And that was why I wanted to wait till the end of the show, because
yeah, that's a big topic.
You know, he's in his 70s and he seems like he just doesn't understand anymore. You know what? We don't necessarily need a big personality. I don't need a fucking love triangle in the middle of my cruiserweights. You know, I want to watch two guys go out there and bust their ass to entertain me and make me care about their match. I don't need to know that, hey, I should care about their 2-minute match because their girlfriend distracted so-and-so and right, that's what's causing this.
I've been saying for months, look how good NXT is on a weekly basis, consistently. Look how good the takeovers are consistently. And Triple H is running it. But at the same time, NXT is running on that old WWF formula from the mid-80s or whatever it is, mid to late 80s, where you have a weekly show that builds towards a pay-per-view every 2 months. And then when you have your pay-per-view, you've just spent 2 months building towards this, and now you have five tight, well-played, storylined matches. And there's not a lot of gaga going on the paper, on takeovers, or even on the weekly NXT show. It's mostly wrestling. And I think, to me, that shows if Triple H is running this and it's so much better consistently all the time, and Vince McMahon is running Raw and SmackDown and it's so much worse consistently all the time, then yeah, Vince McMahon, I think, is out of touch.
So the other question is he out of touch, or is he just bored and he's just hit the status quo? Because what wrestling reminds me of, at least WWE wrestling reminds me of a lot now, is the way the WWF was pre-Nitro. It's like, look, we're going in, we're going to put on a show, we're going to go home. You know, it took competition to light a fire in that man.
Yep.
For him to go, oh my God, I've got to fight for my, you know, my right to live. I got to fight for my company, and I got to do whatever it takes to do this. And all of a sudden, things were incredible. And then and I quit watching the WWE shortly after WCW and ECW folded because I already felt it shifting right back into that. When he blotched the whole WCW, you know, invasion, I was like, he's already bored. Like, he already doesn't care. He got what he wanted. Now he can just, you know, he's just got to please the stockholders, keep the toy makers happy. He's just going to bring in money, and he's not going to strive to reach that casual audience anymore. And
I mean, it could be. I mean, he essentially took over for his dad 35 years ago. And initially, the big challenge was taking it national, and he did it. And then he got, you know, then he got complacent. And then he had the competition of Nitro. So then he was challenged again. And then once that challenge was over, he became complacent. So maybe you're right. I mean, yeah, I could totally see that.
And I know he keeps saying he's not going to pull his responsibilities when the XFL launches. But part of me thinks he will. I mean, because at least with the XFL, whether it's direct or indirect, he is competing with the NFL.
Well,
and I can see him needing to dedicate that time because he's going to want to do better.
I just read something today that basically said that one of the main reasons why Triple H was given 205 Live to take over is because he is going to slowly be absorbing a lot of responsibilities, as Vince will be shifting focus to the XFL. I know initially they said, oh no, that Vince is still, his main focus is WWE, but I think that's a bunch of stockholder bullshit to keep the stockholders happy.
Yeah, so they're not panicking.
Running for cover. So I think they're going to slow build Triple H, showing, hey, look, Triple H runs NXT, he's running 205 Live. Oh, he's running this now, he's running that now, to give the stockholders that good faith that they're in good hands with Triple H running it, and that way Vince can go over here and people don't, you know, freak out, panic, and run. That's why I think the NXT is going to take 3 years, or two more years, whatever it is, to start, and that's why I think, you know, so either a slow build to NXT and a slow build to Triple H taking over.
I can say, and that would make sense. I mean, I think he would at least. I read the results of the fan responses to the 205 house show and how exciting it was.
Yeah.
And you know, and then you see, you know, an amazing match, you know, with Roderick Strong and a crowd that's completely exhausted and not into it. It's like I could see him. I mean, moving it to the NXT taping or something, and you know, and revitalizing that whole brand. And I think it's time for new eyes. I really do.
Well, the thing about the 205 Live is that if they move to NXT, it's not live anymore.
Yeah, that's fine though.
And I think
I'd rather watch it taped than watch that bullshit.
No, I agree with what you're saying, but I think hopefully they can build the brand enough that when someone's going to a SmackDown taping, you know, they're looking forward to that aspect of the taping is, you know, once SmackDown's done, they're getting 205 Live, and they know they're going to get some great matches. If you continue to see good match quality like we saw this past week going forward, you know, it's going to build the wrestling, you know, it's going to keep the wrestling fans there. So.
I agree.
I don't know. I know one thing's for sure. I really wanted to see Pete Dunne in the Royal Rumble, and I wanted him to win if he was in it. Otherwise, my pick was Shinsuke Nakamura, because like you said, when you don't see it coming and you don't know what's going to happen, it can be the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got anything else in your notes? Did we cover all four pages?
You know, we pretty much did. I had two. You know what? No, we didn't. But, you know, I'll be honest with you. Two little things else. Cause I know this thing's running long now.
Oh, who cares?
Okay. Well, if you don't care, then we'll go.
We're at like 90 minutes. That's
oh, okay.
Deal.
All right. So, Lucha Underground. They're losing, most likely, the temple and Dario. Because he's dead. But, spoiler alert, sorry. But...
Wait, how hold on bad a second. Is Dario dead in real life?
No. You know, they killed him off, though, in that last episode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So...
Why would they be losing the temple?
Supposedly it's not in the budget. That's what I read. So they're going to have to find a new place. And neither is his actor salary.
See, the thing about Lucha Underground, which was great when it came out, was that you got exposed to a lot of talents you haven't seen anywhere. And then the downside of Lucha Underground is they taped a whole season a year ago and haven't aired it yet.
You very much, yes.
You know, you can't stay new, hip, and fresh. You can't... It's a TV company running wrestling like it's a TV show. And you can't run wrestling like it's a TV show. You got to run wrestling like it's a live event that happens to be on TV. Like football, baseball, whatever.
See, I don't know. I don't know if I agree. I think what they did was good. I just think they need their production needs a quicker turnaround. You know, I liked Lucha Underground.
Okay, you know what? I would agree with you there as well. Then that what they did is good. They need a quicker turnaround. Yeah, I can't argue with that.
It's no different than what TNA's or Impact's doing now. I mean, if you're taping 2 months ahead of time, I mean. That's my biggest thing with them. But I don't know. The temple was just such a part of the atmosphere.
Well, that was the Impact Zone. That was the ECW arena. I mean, that's what made that's what makes NXT at Full Sail so exciting is that regular crowd that's always there, or the Impact Zone or whatever, you know. That was the temple, and it was a unique facility.
Yeah. Very nice look. I'll be interested in seeing what they have to do. I'm not holding my breath. I'm waiting on, I'll believe it when I see it type deal. Yep. With them even coming back. We touched on the NWA earlier a little bit more. So yep. Tommy Dreamer getting his NWA title shot at House of Hardcore.
March 24th. Yeah.
March 24th. So I think we're all in agreement that Tommy's going to take the clean pin and his own promotion in front of everybody.
I think so. I think that's what's got to happen. Clean pin, center of the ring, new NWA World Champion, Tommy Dreamer.
Oh, really? That's what you're going for, right? I don't think that's going to go your way. I would love to see it.
I have seen Tommy Dreamer wrestle live, I think, 12 or 13 times. He has lost every single time. I've never seen Tommy Dreamer win a match in person. So...
Yeah, I don't. part of me, I want to be excited for it, but, you know, if they gave it to Dreamer, I would be so shocked and I would become the NWA's biggest fan because I would just be like, what? Anything can truly happen in the NWA. You know, that day.
I mean, truly, you deserve it, chant would break out.
That is very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So random question, because I was listening to you guys discuss the All In event, which has been really quiet with the whole Bullet Club drama going on.
Well, yeah, it's not till September, so you just got to take a back seat for a little while there.
So, and this is going to be a random, weird question, but I'm just throwing it out there. So, there was some discussion about Hulk Hogan joining the Bullet Club a few months ago, or maybe a few weeks ago, and how he had an invite, but whatever. What would you think if he showed up at All In?
I don't know. I think...
Would it help the attendance hit the 10,000?
No.
No?
Because... No. Because the people that are watching the Bullet Club right now, you know, the Young Bucks, Cody Rhodes, you know, Kenny Omega, you know, the Elite, all this stuff. People that are watching that now, they're not... They're young. They're a younger, hipper crowd, in my opinion. You know, they're not going to go because Hogan's not going to wrestle. So
no.
It's just like when big time wrestling, and you're familiar with them.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they come up to Maine, And they're like, oh, you know, like, Mick Foley's going to be there. I'm like, why don't you take that money and spend it on someone that can actually wrestle in the ring? Because Big Time would have a tendency to come run a show and bring a bunch of names that either are too old to wrestle or don't wrestle anymore. So they're just making an autograph appearance. And then they're putting on not really great quality matches for a show. And it's like, why don't you take that money instead and bring up some guys that can wrestle and go so we can actually see some great matches.
I can agree with that. I don't know if they're going to hit the 10,000. I just don't see what draw they're going to bring in that's going to hit the 10,000 mark.
I think themselves, really. I think they are the draw.
10,000 is a lot of freaking people.
I know. But I think they are the draw. I don't know. It depends on where it is, too. Let's put it that way as well. Depends on where it is.
Yeah, and I mean, I know the last, you know, you're talking about CM Punk and that can bring something in.
If it's in Chicago and CM Punk is all in, they're hitting 10,000.
Yeah, and see, I can buy that. It's just, I was just trying to find some other way to pop that number because as of right now, the people announced are people that you can see any Ring of Honor show you go to, you know, for the most part.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I just feel like there's got to be a side attraction that's either going to bring in a random casual audience or is really going to put this, you know, the diehard IWC type audience over the top.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously Kenny Omega would be your biggest name to do that, but 10,000 people is 10,000 people still. To me,
Hulk Hogan wouldn't be a draw, but maybe to casual fans who have never seen him but have heard the myth, the legend, if you will, maybe that would be a draw for them. I don't know, personally. I guess I don't even know if I can speculate on it because I just said Hogan wouldn't be a draw for me.
Right.
You know, to something like that. Now, if Hogan was doing a signing up here in Maine someplace and I didn't have to spend $100 to get my picture taken with him, then I probably would go do it.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, otherwise, I don't know. Depends on where the show is. Depends on where it is. I mean, if it's in Chicago, well, put Rachel Ellering on the card and have Road Warrior Animal be, you know, walk her to the ring. And there's some nostalgia feel good right there.
Yeah. I don't know. So. We'll have to see how it goes. That was just some random, like, shower thought. I'm like, what if Hulk Hogan showed up? I'm like, how fucked up would that be?
Cause, yeah, I mean,
I guess the last thing I wanted to bring up, which was strange. So Emma, who now officially has the worst wrestling name, Tennille Dashwood. I don't know why that. I don't know if that's her real name or why the hell she stuck with that.
Yeah.
Because I just think Captain Tennille that. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh. So, okay. And she's coming to AML here in North Carolina in a couple weeks. I think it's gonna be her second appearance post WWE. And apparently they've sold out the front row the fastest they ever have.
Yeah.
She's wrestling James Ellsworth, I think, after this, somewhere else. So I was reading an interview with her, and she was talking about how frustrated she was with her career and all that, and how she's looking to make a real name for herself as a woman wrestler because she really didn't like the diva thing, which I kind of shocking, to be honest with her, because I never saw her in-ring thing that much. But what really was amazing, the fact that they sold out so fast, like, and maybe it's just hype and marketing and BS, but they're really hyping it up like she's really bringing in a freaking crowd, and they don't run women's matches in AML. They're actually bringing in a woman just to wrestle her. Is she that big a draw?
Well, she's wrestling in Providence, Rhode Island this Sunday against Rachel Ellering with special guest referee Lance Storm.
Okay.
And apparently it's a good sized crowd. I don't know. I liked Emma. I was a fan of hers. I didn't like this whole Emelina crap she was doing. But when her last two matches for the Fed are against Asuka, and she has a great showing in one of them, You know, she still has that WWE name draw right now.
Yeah.
And she's never been on the independents that most fans know of in the United States or in this area. So, yeah. Maybe.
It just it shocks me.
It surprises me sometimes, too. Yeah, who's she wrestling at AML?
Savannah Evans.
I have no idea who that is.
She's a journey woman through here. I think she's from D.C. or somewhere up in Virginia. So I saw her big time last year, and she kind of pops up here and there, Queens of Combat and stuff.
Yeah.
Which Queens of Combat are actually coming back. I missed them in January. They're coming back in March again here to North Carolina.
Nice.
With a mature audience show.
Ooh. Really?
I don't know what that means, but I'm buying tickets probably this weekend. they put it in big red letters and it looked haunting, and I'm like, you know what? I got to find out what that means. So I will definitely drive to Burlington to find out. That's not a problem.
You know, it could mean anything. Don't expect nudity.
I'm not. Honestly, I'm expecting it's just a bunch of bullshit, to be honest with you. For ticket suckers like me to be like, this is the time I really need to go see the Queens of Combat.
I went to a show back in 2003 in Danbury, Connecticut. It was my first wife. It was our fifth wedding anniversary vacation, and I actually flip-flopped our vacation all around so I could go to a wrestling show to see Terry Funk and meet Terry Funk. It was worth it, by the way. I literally rearranged the entire vacation. We were supposed to spend, three nights up in, northern Connecticut, and then the last two nights down in the southern part of Connecticut, and we had all these plans and everything, and then I found out Terry Funk was going to be there. So I completely flipped it so that we spent the two nights in southern Connecticut first, and then the last three nights in northern, which I'm glad I did. And then I had to switch reservations. I actually had to change hotels because, I had to jump through some hoops, but I don't care. So I go to this show. It was the promotion was called Exobuco or something like that. They only ran a couple shows. But they were advertising a wrestling bear. So excited to see a wrestling bear. I'm like, I want to see this. I want to see this big carny bear. This is going to be awesome. I can't wait to see this. I was so jacked up to see this. And then when the match happens for the wrestling bear, some guy comes out in a bear suit.
Oh, what a letdown.
It was. It was a tremendous letdown. I wanted to see, granted, the guy in the bear suit was Mikey Whipwreck, but...
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, yeah. So that was cool. But the point is, I don't know. I just wanted to see a wrestling bear so bad. And so it was kind of a bait and switch. And that's what I think your mature show is going to be. You're immediately probably thinking, I'm going to see some boobs in a wrestling match. No, you're probably not.
Now, and they kind of pride themselves on trying to provide, really good women's wrestling matches. So
right.
Maybe some profanity in the crowd. Maybe that's what's right. Going on.
Or maybe it's a bar where the venue is and you have to be 21 plus to get in it.
No, they always go to CWF's, the Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium. That's where they're at back again. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
That looks like I've watched some of their YouTube shows. That looks like a nice looking venue, like an old school, studio venue with the flags and everything.
Yeah, I went to it in 2011 to see Dragon Gate. They ran a show there right before WrestleMania, and it's nice. It's weird. It's like in a strip mall.
Yep.
Like it's like you don't expect it, and you're like, what is this, and then you just walk in, and now they've got this luxury box with recliners and you can bring up 8 people in it. They're $100 a pop, but
hey, 8 people though, that's not bad.
Yeah Well, I think it's $100 per person.
But
they bring, you have a personal waiter, photo ops, even if you sit in the front row, it's free concessions, all you can eat. And they have oversized padded chairs. I'm like, geez, talk about luxury. I'm considering, because they got a show Saturday night. I'm considering on the way back from Ring of Honor on Charlotte, swinging through there and catching the show. We're gonna have to see how much I spend at Ring of Honor first.
Well, I think that seems worth it.
Yeah,
I'm just catching on the way back through. When I'm going to in March, I'm going to Madison Square Garden. To see WWE, because I've just always wanted to go to Madison Square Garden. I think we kind of talked about that or chatted about it, famous wrestling venues and what we've been to. I'm trying to think, what was the venue you went to that was hot as hell? Where Crockett used to run.
Dorton Arena.
Dorton Arena, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so talking about historic venues, for me, it was always, always wanted to go to Madison Square Garden. And just never did. Always had a reason why not, why I wasn't going to work out. And this time I saw my buddy. He's like, we need to stop talking about it. We just need to fucking do it. And so, you know, we have our tickets for the show. We have our hotel all booked and it's all paid for. I just bought the train tickets yesterday because we're taking the train from Providence down because my buddy lives in New Bedford, Mass. So I'm going to go down to his house and then we'll take the train from Providence, Rhode Island, because about 40 minutes away from his house is Providence, Rhode Island. So take the train from Providence right down into Penn Station, which is right underneath Madison Square Garden. And, like, I'm so friggin' excited about it. Well, I'm driving to his down to his house on Thursday night. And a half hour away from his house, XWA is running their weekly Thursday night show. It costs $5 to get in. You never know who's going to be there. It all depends on who else is working in the area during the weekend. So I'm totally going to go to that. Stay up way too late. Get up early, not have any sleep, and then jump on a train. So I'll sleep on the train, damn it.
Yeah, there you go.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm... So, yeah, I try to squeeze in as much as I can. My wife is going away for a week in April. She's going down to see her aunt in Maryland, actually. Her and her mother are going down with our son and our nephew because daycare's closed that week. And it actually happens to be during April vacation week. And I'm working most of the days, but I have 2 days. I have a couple days off during that week, and I'm already like, where can I find a wrestling show? Because I have no restrictions on me. I can just go.
I understand. That's the first thing I do whenever my wife's like, oh, I'm going to go see my mom. And I'm like, sweet, what's going on this weekend?
What movie? Can I go see a movie? What movie do I want to go see? Or can I go to a wrestling show? My go-to is always, can I go to a wrestling show? Because that's my priority. Like, if I'm going to leave the house and leave my wife with one or two of the kids or whatever it is, and I typically bring my – I always bring my oldest son with me when we have him when I go. But, like, if I'm going to leave the house and go do stuff with my friends and I'm taking time away from my family, then I want to make sure I'm picking and choosing. And 99% of the time I'm picking wrestling over everything else because that's my love. That's my priority. So, but anyway, good times indeed. Well, I think that's the show. Oh, one more thing. Last thing.
All right, let's hear it.
On the WWE Network, they recently added a section called to the Vault. It's called Classic WWE Home Videos. And it's the Coliseum. It's a bunch of them. I don't know. There's a couple dozen at least, but it's like the Coliseum home video releases, you know, Super Tape, WrestleFest, Most Unusual Matches, Whack 'em, Smack 'em, you know, it's all those like Coliseum home video releases and everything with match collections and everything. And so that's really cool. One of them they put up there is the UK only release they did of the Battle at Royal Albert Hall.
Oh, nice.
And that only got released on VHS in the UK. I've never seen it. I've heard about it. I've seen clips. I've never seen the actual show. So that's pretty exciting. However, what's absolutely devastating, is on the old Coliseum home video releases, they actually have the opening, you know, that classic with the 5,000 years ago and then the roll, and then it shows the Coliseum there over in Italy, over in Rome. And then it has the old classic, you know, it's that Coliseum home video music. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
They changed the music.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it because I love, like, that is my childhood, renting WWF Coliseum home video releases and that music.
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay, I'm being horrible right now with it. I'll probably tack it on to the end of the show now. But, yeah, like, I'm looking at the desktop of my computer and I see it right here where it says WWF Coliseum home video theme. Like, I can just open it up at any time and listen to it. I love that theme. And to me, that's kind of part of my childhood because that would kick on. I'd watch that. I'd listen. I'd get all jacked up and excited to see those classic clips. Of course, the first shot's Madison Square Garden, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, they changed the song, and I was just, yeah.
That's a bummer, because I haven't checked any of them out yet, and like you, that was my childhood, too. That was how I saw pay-per-views and events, and God, I was years off sometimes, you know, and I'll never forget somewhere around 97, it was right before, you know, wrestling had its big resurgence. I was at a flea market in Dallas, Texas, and some guy was closing a video store, and so he had, was wholesaling all VHS tapes. Now, none of them had boxes. That was the only bummer.
That's too bad, because I love those classic clamshell cases.
Oh, yeah, but I think I walked out with, I mean, almost $100 worth of tapes. Like, my dad, I God bless him, he freaking paid for them because he knew that I would wear them out. And, I mean, I don't know, SummerSlam 92 was in there. I remember SummerSlam 95 was in there. I mean, there was just so many of them. Plus, I had already been collecting them off and on throughout the years. And, what you know, I talk about this a lot when I talk about retro things. But, you know, back then, when you had analog video like that, like, you felt special because you're like, I'm the only person in the world that's seen this. Like, you kind of felt like that. You're like, I found this tape,
yep,
and nobody else knows about this,
yep,
but I know how awesome SummerSlam 92 was.
Yep.
You know, cause you didn't have the internet, and you didn't have, you know, if you didn't have friends that watch wrestling, it wasn't like it was a big deal. So it was just, it had such nostalgia.
I've talked about this with other friends as well. It's like, you know, when I was a kid, we would watch a tape until it got like onion skin thin, and then that tape would break, and then you're like, son of a bitch. Or if your VCR ate the tape, you're like, oh no!
Yeah.
You got, you get the tape out, you open the case up, you gotta cut the bad part away. Hopefully you're not cutting away too much of whatever the match is, or the show, or the movie, or whatever it is. You gotta tape it back together, you gotta reel it, make sure you put it in the right way, put the case back together, and oh, good, it works now. You know, my kid's biggest issues today is, oh man, it's buffering! You know?
Yep.
Yeah. So, real quick, last thing, because we've said that a few times. We've talked about this with Aaron and others. What is the greatest video rental, wrestling video rental, home video? We agree on this. I don't know if you're going to, I don't know. And it's not match quality wise, but when you were kidding, you went in to go rent a wrestling tape. I always rented this one a lot. If there was nothing new on the shelf and there was a specific reason.
My go-to, if I couldn't find anything else, was usually SummerSlam 91.
See, for me, it was WrestleMania 4 because it was two tapes for one rental.
That's a very good point. Yes, it was.
Another one that I loved a lot was, it was released by Turner Home Entertainment, and it was the Best of Starrcade 1983 to 1987. It was 4 hours long, and that is the first, you know, that had, like, well, the best matches from those Starrcades. You know, it had the Flair race match. It had the chain match with Roddy Piper and Greg Valentine. It had the I Quit match with Magnum TA and Tully Blanchard. It had the Skywalkers. You know, it had all the great matches. So.
Yeah, my NWA tape was always Starrcade 86 because the front cover.
Dude.
Yeah, it had the Skywalker, and it had it on the front cover. I love that tape, and that actually was one of the ones I ended up buying at the flea market. It was like the only NWA or WCW tape, and I was so happy.
Nice, that's awesome. That is awesome, dude. Cool. All right, man. Well, let's wrap it up. We've been talking for a while. Thanks for listening. You can find me on the Twitter machine. I'm at SuperstarML.
I'm at Lucha Koopa.
Yeah, make sure you check out the Wrestling Insomniac. That's my blog. That's where I blog about wrestling. That's where Brandon also blogs about wrestling. Check out VideoStoreCorner.com, actually. It's a retro blog that Brandon runs, and I contribute a little bit here and there, too. About everything classic and awesome. And, check out my buddy Aaron at Aaron S. Bell, Ronnie's Ronbar 316, Paul's at Who's Paul. And the show is, I almost forgot the show's Twitter. The show is 1000 Holds Pod, and then, of course, Facebook podcast for 1000 Holds. And thanks.